I am honored to be here tonight. Thank you very much for being a part of this Family Vacation Bible School. We have a Family Vacation Bible School coming up in July, and I know what kind of work it is to put one of those on. And so for those who have played a major part in that, my hat's off to you, and I appreciate you very much. I appreciate David Sargent. He is a great man, and he's also a great friend, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that we are so close. Even though we're so close, we don't cross paths as much as we should, but I'm thankful for him, and I'm thankful for all of you today. I am going to take a little bit of a different approach to the story of Daniel, and I either ask for your forgiveness in advance or permission, either one, whichever that may be. But the point I'm going to look at tonight is through Daniel's eyes, how we can mold ourselves to have functioning families that are part of God's will. And you know, if I were the devil, Paul Harvey some time ago had one of his scripts that talked about if I were the devil. And I preached a sermon about that a couple years ago myself. But if I were the devil, the first thing I'd do is destroy the family. And let me just tell you, folks, that's not news. He's been doing that since day one. Since paradise was here and Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, the first thing he tried to do was interrupt the family dynamics, and he did a pretty good job of it. And the devil's having a field day in 2014 of destroying the family. Family's very important to me. My whole family worships at Isaiah City. Some of you might be scared to death of that, but for me, it's a blessing. It really is. And my mom and dad, my mother-in-law, father-in-law, brothers, aunts, I've got the whole nine yards there. And so it's a blessing to have that, to know that I can sit on the pew and I'm going to have my in-laws there, or I can sit a few pews back and my parents will be there. That's a blessing to me. Family's important to me, and I'm thankful for my family. And I'm praying real hard that my children will grow up to not only be great Christians, but marry great Christians, because I believe the very most important decision we'll make is that to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. The second is who we marry. And I think that's very important. And I know we might have some teenagers in here or some young families, if you will. But the reality is, I hope this is a lesson that will reach the whole spectrum. And I hope it's something that will benefit you and will strengthen our families. I want to change slides here and go to this word, dysfunctional families. I believe the word dysfunctional is overused today. I believe it is. I hear people talk about if they have any problems in their families, oh, we've got a dysfunctional family or what have you. And you may have even said that about your own family because it can be overused, and sometimes our own families can be overwhelming. But the reality is there are dysfunctional families. And if you were to go to counseling services and look at their data, they would tell you that this is what would qualify a dysfunctional family. And I'm just going to read some of that to you. If a family has little or no communication, that family is typically labeled dysfunctional. If you were to ask me, the number one problem in relationships today, if the old survey says the family feud, you know, we'd say survey says number one, some of you would say it'd be money. And I would say that that'd be right up there. But most of the time, I would say it'd be number one would be lack of communication. Because most of the fights over money is because it's a lack of communication as well. The reality is communicating is key. We're going to have families that grow up and all they go do is text each other because that's where we're going. I taught 10 years at Mobile Christian School, and so when I taught those kids, I would tell them, look, your parents don't even need to have minutes on your plan because all y'all do is text. And, you know, I remember when I first started cell phone, you know, with text messaging, we had 100 text messages on our plan, and I thought, we'll never use that many text messages. Well, then we added 250, and now I have unlimited because I'm here to tell you I send about or receive about 2,000 a month myself. You know, you just don't think of how communication, that is a form of communicating, but it may not be the best form. But the reality is, if there's little or no communication in the family, that could be dysfunctional. If there's high levels of tension and or arguing, that certainly would qualify as dysfunctional. We have a rule in my family, and I'll tell you about some of these more in a little bit. We don't yell across the house. I've been in homes where people, husbands and wives, just yell at each other all the time. They tell you they're happily married, but you're wondering, how in the world are you happily married? They're just yelling at each other all the time. But if families are, there's always tension, there's always arguing, then chances are that family's dysfunctional. If there's extended periods of silence, blame, avoidance, and avoidance as primary coping mechanisms, instead of just talking about it, communicating about it, let's just go our own ways. Let's just be separate and apart, and let's be in this room and that room, then chances are that family could be dysfunctional. If the overall message of don't feel, don't talk, or don't trust is in a family, then that family would be dysfunctional. Dysfunctional families can lead to the following: battering, physical abuse of one or more family members. That is something that is increasing in society. Good rule of thumb, if you are not married in here, and I don't know if that's anybody, but a good rule of thumb to those who may be looking for husbands or wives would be this: if they're hitting walls, the next thing they're going to hit is you. And that's just the reality. These type things lead to abuse. Dysfunctional families can also lead to inappropriate sexual behavior and or sexual abuse. Can lead to emotional abuse, chemical dependency, compulsive eating or dieting, compulsive gambling. I've seen families destroyed because they didn't want to go home, so they went to casinos. And they started with $5 slots, and then they lost everything they had. It happens. Or workaholism. I don't even know if that's a word, but the reality is they put work before everything else. A few more of these points. People from dysfunctional families can end up in an abusive relationship or find themselves unable to maintain relationships. Other areas in which adult children often report problems include, but are not limited to, guessing what normal is, judging themselves without mercy, difficulty following projects through from beginning to end, taking themselves very seriously, difficulty with intimate relationships, feeling different from other people, constantly seeking approval and affirmation, being either overly responsible or overly irresponsible, avoiding conflict or aggravating it, but rarely dealing with it, fear of rejection and abandonment, yet rejecting of others. Now, again, if you were to go to a counseling service and ask, do I have a dysfunctional family, then chances are they're going to read from something very similar to that and say these are the qualifications of a dysfunctional family. So chances are, as we went through that, and I know I went through it fast because I got a lot to get to, but chances are, as we go through that, we know of someone that fits that mold. Chances are that we may have even struggled with those, our own self. The good news is today that if we have been through that type of family, we have experienced that type of family, or we know someone that has that type of family, the good news is we don't have to stay dysfunctional. We can be fully functioning families if we allow God to be in control of our families. You know, influence plays a large part in making families functional. If you think to Daniel 1, and you might want to go ahead and turn to Daniel 1. If you go to Daniel 1 and you look at the lesson here, King Nebuchadnezzar, he is now in control of Judah. The Lord has delivered them over into Nebuchadnezzar's hands. And that's something that needs to get our attention right there. Okay, God's people, His chosen people, He said that enough is enough. He delivered him over in Babylon's hands, and here's the king. Well, you know what the king does? He does his best to influence Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar's a wishy-washy kind of guy. You know, he's either extremely cold, or he, after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he seemed to be extremely hot. And you know, the reality is, the reason people are wishy-washy is because they don't ground in anything. They don't have a grounded faith. And Nebuchadnezzar tries to be an influence on Daniel, but not in a positive way. Well, if you think of society today, we got a lot of influences. Influences come from all over the place. I still believe the number one place that influence plays the biggest part is from families, parents and families. I still believe the family has that much of an influence. But television also does, radio, music, movies, internet, friends, teachers, ministers, church in general. We cannot function properly if our families aren't 100% influenced by God. If you look at Daniel, and we're going to look at that lesson, we see that who was Daniel's primary influence? His primary influence was God. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful he leaves that message for all of us. Well, tonight I want to talk about what can we do? Patterning our lives after Daniel, what can we do to have better families? Again, I believe the family is under attack more so now than it has been in some time. There are so many things that I am scared to death in raising my children up. Again, I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I love them very dearly, and I love my wife dearly, and it's a big job. You see, when God gave us our children, and I held Bo for the very first time, and I'm walking to Providence from the delivery room to the nursery, I'll never forget, the pediatrician was there, and our pediatrician, he's the kind of guy I'd like to just, you know, I wish he'd take my fears away. He's an older fella, and I love him. I love this pediatrician. He's a very God-fearing man. And so we're walking, and I had, obviously the awe is on my face. And he tells me, and his son is a minister, so and again, he's got a lot of religion in him. He says, and people say there is no God. You know, and I think about that, and I think about he gets it. Here's this man, this doctor. He gets it. He knows that this child's from God. And I know this child's from God. And you know what God said? He said, hey, Terry, I'm loaning these kids to you, but I want them back. And that's a big job. That's the way we look at our families. That's the way we look at raising them. Hey, they're on loan from God. And so what can I do better as a husband? If I'm a husband, I'm asking that question. What can I do better as a father? If I'm a father, I'm asking that question. Wives, mothers, grandparents. By the way, grandparents, don't think your job is done. You've done a great job, but we need you too. We need all of you. Aunts, uncles, we need positive Christian families that are leading fully functioning families. So what can we do? I believe number one, I hope I'm not too far behind. Okay, there we go. Fully functioning families do not conform to the ways of the world. Look at Daniel chapter 1 verse 8, please. If you read Daniel 1, verse 8, and again, we're not going to read every verse of this chapter, but just to give you the gist of it, the king wants some young men without blemish, and he wants them to be groomed for his court, for his servants. And look at verse 8. You know, he's given them food. He's tried to give these delicacies from his table. He's given them wine, which they can drink. And he's trained them. And so at the end of this training, he wants them to be able to serve him as king. He wants to fatten them up and get them ready. Remember, Babylon now, it's a godless nation. Okay? They serve all these foreign gods and what have you. There's no Jehovah God. There's no Yahweh there. And so that's the reality of it. He's the king. He's got a God complex. I'm the man, and you're going to worship me. And so he wants it done this way. But look at verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. Some say Daniel's 16 years old when he is taken up to train. I don't know. I know that he's not an old man per se. But here's what I do know. Let's say we are 16 years old. By the way, you couldn't pay me enough money in the world to go and be 16 years old again. I got through those teenage years, thanks be to God, and I don't want to go back to them. I really don't. It's hard to be a teenager. I mean, it's hard to raise teenagers. And by the way, some of you have done a great job. You know I've already talked to you about it. I want your notes, okay? I want you to take these notes down so I can have them to raise my children up, especially through those years. But the reality is, here's Daniel. Let's face it. I mean, this man, you know, he's grown up following Jewish tradition, Jewish law. And now all of a sudden he can eat whatever he wants. He can drink whatever he wants. And he's got it made. Now to most teenagers, per se, that's a pretty good deal. Sign me up. You know, I'm working for the king. This is going to be great. I'm going to have all these blessings, all these luxuries. But you know what he says? He said, no, thank you. He said, I don't want to defile myself. See, not only would he be defiling himself, he'd be defiling the will of God. And that's a big deal to Daniel. In a godless nation, as a teenager perhaps, he doesn't want to defile what God's plans for his life. Now you think about that. Now let's take that to our lives right now. If I'm a father, you know, it's easier for a visiting preacher to say some things, and so I'm just going to say them. The church at Isaiah City is probably immune to me saying this. But we had quite a few folks miss church this morning. You know why they missed church this morning? Because All-Stars is going on. You know, and my child plays baseball. And I played baseball coming up, and I love sports. And, you know, I coached it for 10 years and you know, and everything else. But I think about, what if we did make a difference? What if we did take a stand? What if we did decide that enough is enough? That I'm not going to conform to the world? Or what if on Wednesday nights, you know, I understand. Listen, I've been a teacher. I know, and I appreciate Mobile Christian. They try to not overload children, and I can appreciate Coach Kathy. We never had homework on Wednesday nights, and I appreciate that, Coach Kathy. All right? But I understand Mobile Christian tries with that. But let's say they play in sports, and they've got, you know, college-level classes, and they've got all this going on and everything else. And you know, it'd just be, man, church is just in the way. What if we decided that church was more important? What if we, as a father, said, no, that's not going to be the way it is. We're going to Bible class. Or we've got a big deal due on Monday. We went to Sunday school and we went to Sunday morning church. Let's face it, let's just miss tonight. Again, you know I'm not talking to you. You're here. But what if as a father we made that decision? I'm not going to conform to the world. What if as a mother we made that decision? What if we set those examples? What if we raised Daniels? We live in a dysfunctional Babylon, folks. I love America. Memorial Day was last week, and I love you men and women who fought to keep us free or are fighting to keep us free. Praise God for you. You're in my prayers daily. I love America. I love the free, but I do not like the sin that's being glorified. We are in a dysfunctional Babylon. Let's face it, homosexuality is on every place we turn. It will be a hate crime if it's not already. David and I will be in danger of going to jail in not that long. And Stephen and others who preach the gospel, I mean, obviously we got to make a decision and still teach against sin. What about abortion? I mean, millions every year being killed. Alcohol, it's no reason that it's no doubt in our minds what makes a lot of money for these companies, these marketing firms, because alcohol's there. Sex and pornography. And let me just say, I taught school for 10 years, and I don't have any issue talking about this because it's what the kids needed to hear. Now, maybe at first I was a little uncomfortable, but I realized that they're hearing it from everybody else that all this is okay. They need to hear it from a Bible teacher that it's not. Well, let's think if they heard it from a mama and daddy or a grandparent. By the way, pornography, we talk about sex, drugs, and alcohol, and I understand we could lump that in there, but pornography is ruining families. It's ruining them. Profane language, acts of violence, fathers not doing what God wants fathers to do. Sorry, I'm going to grab it in a minute, aren't I? Mothers not doing what God wants mothers to do. Women being the head of the household. Guys, listen, I love that women have equal rights. I do. Women can get jobs. In fact, I wish my wife made more money than me. I do. I'd be proud of that. But God designed it for fathers to be the head. And fathers, we got to do a better job. Husbands, we got to do a better job. Children ruling the roost. I was a youth minister for 14 years. I understand how some families that is the case. Or what about being more concerned, parents being more concerned with being their best friends than parents? Listen, I love both my kids, and they have too much. We kept our nieces yesterday, and they said, Uncle Terry, y'all need to have a yard sale. And you know what? It's kind of embarrassing. It really is. They have way too much. mainly because I'm a big kid too. And I love to play with my kids. Listen, I can play Olaf. I can play Elsa. I can play Anna, even with my daughter. And I can play wrestling with my son. Okay? But the reality is, I am their father first. And they know that. They know that daddy's fun, but when it comes down to it, daddy's daddy. And listen, I'm not perfect at that, but I just know. That's something I learned, and I got to hurry up because there's no way I'm getting through at 7 o'clock. Daniel was to eat and drink like the godless nation. That's what Nebuchadnezzar wanted. You eat and you drink and you do what I say. That's what the world wants us to do, is cave in around them. However, he was convicted to not conform to the world. We need more Daniels in our families. If we have more Daniels in our families, we'll raise more Daniels in the world. A second point that we'll look at tonight is fully functioning families conduct themselves holy. What's your verse for that? I'm going to go back to 1 verse 8 again. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel said in so many ways, I'm going to be holy because God is holy. I'm going to do God's will over the king's will. Now he went about it in the right way. He was asking for this. He requested of the chief of the eunuchs. He didn't just say, this is the way I'm going to be and you just get over it. He was respectful, and I appreciate that. But even when the chief eunuch tries to convince him in the next verse, hey, the king may not go for this, Daniel still refused to eat and drink and defile the will of God and his will. You see, he knew he answered to a higher power. There are certain things that it's okay to do at certain ages that it's not ever okay to do in God's sight. Because we don't answer to the law of the land. Yes, I understand to a certain extent, but ultimately God's law trumps it. And we've got to be in accordance with it. You see, Daniel was dedicated and he was devout. If we forget Daniel, when he went into the lion's den, remember why he's in trouble in the lion's den is because he went through and he prayed just like God had instructed him to pray. He was devout. He was dedicated. He was a man who was on fire for God. Now, here's some questions I think we could ask ourselves with that mindset about being holy. Is my mate closer to God or more distant from him because of me? Make it personal. Is my mate more closer to God or more distant from him because of me? Can my family see that doing God's will is the most important priority in my life? I think that's important. I love to hunt. I do. I'll fish. I'm not as much of a fisherman as I am a hunter. And I haven't been into hunting. I was into hunting when I was little, and I took a break from it, and I'm back into it. And let me tell you, I love it. I do. But I got to tell my children and my family, they got to see it, that hunting's not the most important thing in my life. I love sports. Close your ears. I love Auburn football, okay? But my family has to know that Auburn football is not the most important thing in my life. Sports is not the most important thing. Again, I'd like to tell you I did all this perfectly, but I'm a human being and I struggle. And sometimes it may look, and you know, that's something we got to guard against. Is God the most important thing in our life? Does our family take a few minutes each day to read and discuss God's Word? I think that's critical. I think it's critical individually, but I think it's critical as a family. Fathers, we need to be doing that. Do all the family members pray together at least once a day in addition to mealtime? Okay? In addition to mealtime. We always try to pray, but something we routinely did this year, and I'm sad to say that we didn't routinely do it until this year, but before we leave the house, we say a prayer together, arm in arm, hand in hand. And it's just a real neat gesture. I just encourage you to do it. It's a pretty special moment. Is our family ministering to others who are needy, lonely, and struggling, or are we self-sufficient and isolated from those whom Christ came to serve? Is it all about me? or is it about serving others? Does our family talk to one another in loving tones as though we appreciate and value each other? I have tone of voice issues. I'm a card-carrying member of that club. In fact, I would teach Bible at Mobile Christian, and Miss Harbin, I don't think she's here tonight, Miss Donaldson, she was right next to me, and you know, she taught math, and she'd always come and tell me, she said, "I really enjoyed your Bible class today." I understood what that meant. You know, sometimes the kids would come in and, "Coach Cagle, are you mad at us?" I'm like, "No, I'm not mad at you." And you might think that right now. They said, "Then why are you yelling?" I have to watch that in my own self. Remember, sometimes the way we say things, we may not be upset about it. It just may come out. Let's talk to each other in loving tones, like we do appreciate our husbands and our wives and our children. You know, we use deadbolts, alarms, shotguns. That's Sims for you, okay? And assault rifles to protect our families. And I'm not saying I'm against any of that. But sometimes we're the ones that are the most dangerous. It matters what words come out of our mouth. Our family hears our mouths every day. It matters what channels I click on the television. My family sees the shows and movies I watch. You know, sometimes you do face some situations where you're in a you can't avoid it situation. There are commercials that are awful. There are other things that are awful. You know, the best thing for us is this DVR where you can start a little bit later, fast forward this stuff. But the reality is sometimes you come into a can't avoid a situation. You know what I do in those can't avoid it situations? And again, I got a long ways to go in this. And some of y'all may say, "Hey, you're not doing a very good job." But I'm going to tell you how I felt I need to address that moment right then and there. At a very young age, my son saw a beer commercial. And listen, we like sweet tea. And it kind of looked like sweet tea. And he's like, "Daddy, doesn't that look good right there?" Or something to that effect. And you know, it was a teaching moment. A teaching moment. I'd rather him hear it from me than somewhere else. I'd rather tell them, "This is why we don't do that. This is why you won't ever see that in our house. This is why." Use them as teaching. Those can't avoid situations, use them as teaching moments. Don't go paralyzed and scared to death. "Oh no, my child saw this or that. It's awful and we ought to be upset at sin." But let's use it to teach. Discuss alcohol, the dangers of it. Discuss sexual matters. And I understand appropriate age. But you know what? Folks, our kids are learning them. I don't care if they go to Mobile Christian School or where they go. They're going to learn it. Don't be embarrassed to talk to your children. By the way, sex was not created to be ugly. God created Adam and Eve. You know what he told them? First command he told them to do, be fruitful and multiply. It's the devil who messed it up. We need to talk to our children about it at the appropriate age. By the way, there is great material out there, Christian material that's really good that you can use if you're having trouble with that. You know, explain why we don't do these things. Explain to them why we don't do it. It's because we're to be holy as God's holy. Just like Daniel was trying to be holy. It matters what I read. My family sees if I pick up filth and trash to read rather than picking up my Bible. Again, it matters which sites I click on the internet. Pornography is sometimes just a click away or less than that. Facebook. And let me tell you, I have Facebook. I use Facebook. I don't use it near as much as I used to. But let me just tell you, and you know, when I talk about these things, you almost think, well, that's outdated. But it's not, because let me tell you what people I'm very close to, in the last month, three men, their wives have left them or are leaving them because of affairs they got into through Facebook. And I'm telling you, that hits close to home with me. Not only that, but let's don't also use it as a springboard to gossip. People get big and bad behind keyboards, but it's still gossip. It still is. Can be used for good now. We're going to talk more about that in the 8 minutes I have left. I'm watching it. All right. Daniel conducted himself wholly even when his life was on the line. Think about the danger now. This king who says this is the way it's going to be. Now he thinks he's a god. That's how kings were back then, especially You go back and study them. And emperors and different folks, they sit on that throne. Daniel stares in the face of the one who's going to tell this king, and he says, "Hey, I'd rather not eat from the king's table and drink his wine." He stood holy even when his life was on the line. Thirdly, if I'm going to have a fully functioning family, then I need to get rid of the corruptible. Daniel chapter 1, 11 through 16. Read it with me, please. "So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah." By the way, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. "Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink." I'd die, by the way. I don't like vegetables. So, verse 13, "Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants." So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away the portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. Daniel and his friends rid themselves of the corruptible. They got rid of the corruptible, and guess what? They were better off because of it. Boy, it's amazing how that works, isn't it? I must rid myself of the world if I'm going to have a fully functioning family. I understand that's not 100% possible. I mean, we're in the world, and I understand that, but I can't add any more world to what they already experience. See, I shouldn't care what the world has popularized. I should care what Christ has done. In the next few minutes, I'm going to try and open some eyes to some real dangers that may seem innocent. I don't believe any of these in themselves are bad, okay? But I believe all of them can be used and are being used in certain situations for bad things. Some of these you may be aware of, and some of these you may not. But let me say first and foremost, children today are always one step ahead. Seems that way. I remember there was a time when I graduated college, and I'm a country boy at heart, so I've always liked country music. I don't like country music today. I was more of a classic country music kind of guy. But I knew all kinds of music. And I remember saying, when I was a young youth minister, I had it all figured out. And I really didn't know anything. But I'll never be out of touch with music. Folks, you could put a song on today and tell me who it was, and I wouldn't know who it is. I mean, just that quick, things change. And it gets away from us. And we're one or two or a thousand steps behind. Oh, and that's just one thing. So let me just say, and I'm not trying to, again, I was a youth minister for 14 years, and I'm now out of touch with that, now that I've been out of it for about 3 or 4 years. The point I'm trying to say is, we got smart kids, and there's a lot of things going on. There are certain things, again, that are useful that can certainly be corruptible. Computers, electronic devices, cell phones, I've got all the above. Okay? Very good in themselves, but they can be used for bad. I've heard people say, we don't have a problem with that. I just don't watch TV. I just turn the TV off. And that's fine, and I'm proud of you, but there are those that say that. They're spending hours upon hours on their electronic devices, which has got as much danger, if not more. It used to be MySpace. I remember when some of the kids in my youth group made me a MySpace. It's probably out there still in the cyber world somewhere, but I don't even know a password to get on there anymore. But when everybody got on MySpace, you know what they did? They went to Facebook. Guess what? Now that you're on Facebook, the kids aren't. They're one step ahead. Because now, it's things like this. That's Instagram. Facebook bought Instagram. You may not know what any of this is. You may know what all this is. But this is a thing, and again, in itself, it's not bad. You can go take a bunch of pictures of your kids and that you're so proud of, and you can put it on Instagram, and you know, your friends or whoever else can see them. But a lot of times, and I'm not saying I don't know your kids, okay? I'm just saying in general, what's happening is they're taking pictures that are inappropriate of themselves and putting on there so that all can see. Here's another one, Twitter. Twitter is a great way to find things out in this world. I mean, it's on Twitter before it's on channels and everything else. They're tweeting it out. There are also bad things being tweeted out. Here's another one, Vine. What is Vine? Vine's a short looping video clips that you put together. Some of them are meant to be funny or whatever, and some of them are highly inappropriate. Just trying to make you aware. Here's another one. It's Tumblr. Tumblr. I thought it was Facebook at first, but it's a T. Tumblr is a blog where, you know, blogs are just little places that you can write on the internet or whoever can write on the internet. But if you go on some of these Tumblrs and you see that, you know what the, a lot of them are about? They're about their mamas and daddies and about other things, and just so they can be free and express themselves to the world. Skype, it's a beautiful thing. You know, I was in Ukraine. I Skype with my family every night. I teach a Bible class when it's permitted. And by the way, please keep praying for Ukraine. Please keep praying. But when it's still a good time and all, right now it's a little bit of a struggle because of internet there and everything. But I teach a Bible class on Tuesday mornings to their Tuesday evening Bible through Skype. But it's also a way that others can use to show themselves inappropriately and different things like that. There's FaceTime, which is a lot like Skype. It's just with the iPhone world. Again, FaceTime is something that's a beautiful thing. I was able to talk to my kids and family when I was in Ukraine through FaceTime and Skype, and I appreciate that. But again, it can be used inappropriately. You may not know what that one is. Anybody know what that one is? That's Snapchat. You heard of Snapchat lately? Snapchat is a guy who supposedly figured out that they can take a picture inappropriately themselves. By the way, Snapchat was invented for sexting purposes. They can take a picture that's inappropriate themselves, send it to the other person, it can only stay up for a few seconds, and then boom, it's gone. You'd never be able to find it again. That's the thought process behind it. This is what the world says is good. This is what the world says is in. Let's do it. Again, I'm not saying these things. I don't know about Snapchat. It's still, I'm on the bubble with it. But these others are not bad in themselves. But if it becomes corruptible and it's part of the world, then we got to get rid of it. You know, I love the movie. I don't know that I agree with everything in it, but Fireproof. You remember that movie that came out? About a husband and wife, they were struggling, they're trying to fireproof their marriage, and he was addicted to pornography. You remember what he did? He took that computer outside, he took a baseball bat to it, and he beat it to death, so to speak. He was totally getting rid of the world so that he could have a better marriage. That's pretty special. I'm in your time now, and they're probably waiting to come in. Let me say this, some practical ways, real quick. Worship at every chance you get. How can we be holy? How can we get rid of the corruptible? How can our conduct be worthy of the gospel? These type things. How can we be like Daniel? Worship at every chance we get. Look into each other. Do this often. Look into each other's eyes every day and express your love to each other. I don't want to be married 50 years and say it's been the worst 50 years of my life. I've heard people say that, by the way. Okay? And they're saying it to be funny, but it's just not that funny. Find time, no matter how long we've been married, to look into your wife or your husband's or your children's eyes and tell each other every day how much you love them. Discuss God in your household every day. Play a game with your kids. How did you see God today? With a 3-year-old, that is fun. Okay? How did you see God today? Have a family devotional every day. I can't understand for the life of me why, as Christians, we have to teach that point. Family devotionals, the kids love, at a young age, they love acting them out. They love it. Or they love you just coming up with something and just playing a game with it. Singing a song. Ask them a song they want to sing. If you don't know the songs, hey, get on the internet and learn them. Do that every day. Pray together every day. Not just at mealtime. Do something together every day. It is my goal. And some days are long, and some days you go home and you leave and, you know, you're gone till wee hours of the morning in the ministry and other jobs and everything else. But it is my goal every day to make sure that I strive, if I'm at home or even if I'm on the road somewhere and I can look at them, to do something with my family every day. Those don't have to cost at all. It may just be getting in the floor and playing. It may just take a walk. It may just be, I don't know, whatever. Do it every day. Have time in your household where you turn the cell phones off. Get together and turn them off. If it's for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, just turn them off. Put them away. Vacation together. I think it's important. Our bodies need to recuperate. We need time off. We need time away. By the way, don't vacation from God when you go on vacation. But vacation together. Eat one meal together. Again, I know that you have tough schedules, but to try to eat one meal together every day, and that's when we turn the cell phones off. Don't yell across the house at each other. You know, if you're in one room, don't say, "Hey, where are you?" Oh, it doesn't take that much effort. Don't fuss at the dinner table. Hey, there are times when my kids might have had a tough day and, you know I need to get to them and I need to, but don't do it at the dinner table. Make that quality time. Do it later. Laugh together every day. I had somebody tell me, he's passed away recently. He said he used to watch a show that was funny before he went to bed every night. And the reason he did that is because he felt like you needed to go to bed happy. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting thought. Find time to laugh together every day. Be intimate every day with every family member. Intimacy is not a bedroom word, folks. Intimacy is extreme closeness. Be intimate with one another. Serve others every day. When Christ is Lord above all else, then families are going to function properly.